This is Jim Inkster. Coming next on the show, we'll talk about the Baton Rouge Fairness Ordinance going before the Metro Council July 23rd, as in today and tonight. And with 62% of residents in East Baton Rouge Parish supporting an ordinance prohibiting discrimination in housing and employment based on sexual orientation, what happens at the council? Reportedly, the votes are not there right now for passage of this ordinance, and Councilman Ryan Heck has offered a compromise, if you will, that is also gaining some attention. We'll talk about it with Kevin Sarin, the former president of the Capital City Alliance, and attorney Mike Wolf. Also, we'll hear from the veteran newsman and anchorman George Sells with some thoughts about how the media are covering the air tragedy in Ukraine. But now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Today, the Metro Council is slated to vote on the Baton Rouge Fairness Ordinance, introduced by Councilmember C. Denise Marcel, who was with us yesterday. This ordinance would ban discrimination based on race, color, religion, national origin, age, and extend those same protections to gender identity, sexual orientation, and veteran status. It's a controversial ordinance that right now appears to only have three solid votes on the council, in which seven votes are needed. And we're here to talk about it once again. And in the last 24 hours, Councilperson Ryan Heck has offered an anti-discrimination option, dissatisfied with the language in the orientation measure that has been promoted by Councilwoman Marcel. Councilman Heck says he has an alternate proposal, and his proposal is a non-binding resolution that discourages the unjust discrimination against any person whomsoever and any kind whatsoever. Now, Councilwoman Marcel says this is not good enough and that it's really designed, I think, in her estimation, to gum up the works. But we shall see what happens today. It should be a contentious and interesting day at the Baton Rouge Council meeting in downtown Baton Rouge. Good morning, Mike Wolf, attorney, who has some thoughts about whether or not this is a prudent endeavor. By the way, more than 200 cities have adopted similar ordinances, including New Orleans and Shreveport. And Kevin Sarin, the former president of the Capital City Alliance, is also with us in studio. Once again, 297-5633, your local number, and outside the area, 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Let's start with Kevin Sarin. Why do you think this is an overdue ordinance that the city of Baton Rouge and the council should embrace?
Good morning, Jim. Thanks very much for having me this morning. I think it's important to note that a lot of people really are under the mistaken impression that sexual orientation and gender identity are currently protected statuses under federal law, and that's not the case. Many states have similar laws that protect people from employment discrimination and housing discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity, but Louisiana is not one of them. So I think it's very important that we recognize that this is an opportunity for Baton Rouge to show that we're a welcoming city, an accepting city, and we're doing the right thing for all of our citizens.
Mike Wolf, do you think this is something that is needed to provide protection to people who are gay and others, such as veterans and people who are of a minority race?
I don't think it is, Jim. And I want to begin by saying that I believe very much in accepting all people, in respecting human dignity, and I believe in tolerance. It's the personal choice, and tolerance are the fundamentals of the libertarian philosophy. But it is not a good idea to try to fight intolerance with more intolerance. And I believe this ordinance infringes too much on the freedom of association and the property rights of owners, employers, lessees of businesses, and so forth. I don't think the underlying problem is important enough to support this kind of legislation. So somewhat as the pastor said yesterday on your program, I don't see that there's such a large-scale abuse of the rights of people in these categories, veterans or transgender or homosexual or persons, to justify this. It also, the remedies that the proposed ordinance gives are not criminal, they're civil. They say that these actions, discriminatory actions by employers and housing personnel, are can be the grounds of lawsuits, civil actions. And this 12-page long ordinance would encourage frivolous litigation. It would encourage lots of litigation, and we should try to encourage people to voluntarily resolve these matters rather than being forced through the courts. It also makes arbitrary distinctions between religious organizations, organizations with certain numbers of employees and others, veteran status versus non-veteran status, and it can be read to prohibit such reasonable distinctions as different fares for seniors and children in theaters, ladies' nights, gender-based hiring if someone wants women for some job or men for another job. And basically, there are less coercive means of achieving these goals, I think, right. And I very much favor Ryan Heck's proposal. I think it's better handled in that way than by trying to set up a whole new category of legal causes of action.
Well, in the past, the council has voted against even a resolution, and we'll see what happens with Mr. Heck's resolution. But first thing on the agenda will be Councilwoman Marcel's ordinance. David Dotson, the executive editor of the Baton Rouge Business Report, I would think a conservative, business-oriented publication, if there ever was one, writes in the latest issue, "Baton Rouge's official comfort with discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation is not endorsed by the business community. There may be exceptions, but I certainly have not seen the business community engaging in any systematic effort at exclusion or discrimination against gay people in the year I've been back in town. I don't think I'm going out on a limb," writes Mr. Dotson, "to suggest that a specific religious perspective is an impediment to passing such an ordinance, and I'm pretty sure specific verses in the Bible are at the root of it all." So are your words of opposition, Mike Wolf, in any way based on your religious beliefs?
No, at all. But and the point is, where an exception is made for a religious group, an organization, and the proposed ordinance does that. It says a church group or a church organization is not subject to the same rules. Well, what about an individual member of a church? A conscientious practitioner of a religion should have the same rights as the organization. This is one of the arbitrary distinctions I was talking about, but they have to be made whenever you legislate, I realize. But I still think there are less expensive and more effective ways of dealing with this that would not have the unwanted side effects of encouraging phony victimization, lawsuits. The courts are already overburdened and so forth. And I just don't think it's necessary.
All right. 297-5633. We will go to the phone lines in short order with Mike Wolf and Kevin Seren, the former president of the Capital City Alliance, which is a proponent of this ordinance that was sponsored by C. Denise Marcel, who was with us yesterday. An email, Stephen Dixon, a fine attorney, writes, "Heck equals milquetoast." What do you think about this compromise that is being offered by Councilman Heck, Kevin?
Well, first of all, I want to make sure that everyone knows that my views today just reflect my own personal views and don't necessarily reflect the views of the Capital City Alliance. But I think that the alternative proposal is just an opportunity for council members who don't support the ordinance to not be shown or appear as being intolerant or bigoted by casting a no vote against the ordinance. And I think that this so-called resolution has no teeth and really serves no purpose other than making Baton Rouge further look intolerant and not willing to join the rest of so many other cities around the country in supporting measures like the ordinance.
The Capital City Alliance, which you say is separate from your views, is in many ways echoing what you just stated. Here's a statement released by that group saying, "We believe this lays the foundation for an aggressive effort to protect the entire state from employment discrimination and look forward to working with these businesses and organizations to help make Louisiana a better place for all residents and to ensure that everyone has the freedom to work regardless of who they are or who they love." Baton Rouge Metro Council meeting at the City Hall building today at 3:30, and you can bet there will be significant discussion and many people coming to the microphone, including former LSU basketball coach Dale Brown, who has become an activist of this kind. Mike, will you be at the council hearing today?
I don't think I'll have time for it, but I'll be following it possibly on 21 on the cable channel.
All right. Chris on Goodwood. Good morning, Chris. You're on the air with Kevin Sarin and Mike
Good
Wolf.
Good morning. I have 2 points to make. First of all, this is actually not beneficial to the business community, but as you know, if somebody from the business report comes out against it, they will be branded immediately. The problem with this is it does provide a path for lawsuits. As your guest said yesterday, IBM has moved to town. IBM has a policy against this. I work for a large, formerly Fortune 500 company that's formerly based here, Baton Rouge. We had a policy against firing people because of their gender, their preferences, their religious preferences, everything. What companies don't want is the possibility that they will then be sued. However, if a company comes out and says that they're against this ordinance, they will be branded. So they're in a catch-22. But this is not good for business for Baton Rouge because it's going to create an environment where companies can easily be sued whether there's a factual basis for or not for it. You also have to look at the motives behind some of the council people. John Delgado has a financial motive in passing this. His family will make a lot of money off of this type of lawsuit.
All right. Your thoughts, Kevin, about the remarks by Chris on Goodwood?
Well, a recent study out of the Williams Institute at the University of California, Los Angeles, has shown that cities that have a similar ordinance in place report only a 3% increase in lawsuits based on people who have filed a lawsuit based on discriminating against them based on their sexual orientation. So the idea that there would be a flood of frivolous lawsuits just isn't founded in the data.
297-5633, your number. Rob in St. Gabriel. Rob, you're on the air with Mike Wolf and Kevin Sarin.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. My comments are two things. If there is legal action, I'm sure the first thing that's going to happen is a conversation between the attorneys for the company and the individual to see if there is a way to settle this this lawsuit. And the second thing is, as the gentleman pointed out, if a company has a policy that prohibits discrimination, that policy carries the force of law because that's their policy, and so they could be sued whether or not this ordinance is passed. I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right, Mike, you want to
respond? It may be so. I would just emphasize that when you're trying to achieve better behavior, it's always superior to have it be voluntary rather than forced. If it's coerced, it's not genuine. So I prefer to use social pressure. For example, if a hotel were found, or an apartment complex, it were found to systematically discriminate against homosexuals or veterans, well, then the community should shame them. They should be up in arms. They could be picketed. People could write letters. And you could shame that organization and probably course that cause them to change through the social coercion to change their views. And that's how attitude change happens in a free society.
That is something I also agree with, actually, Mike. The issue that I want to bring up, though, is a matter of personal dignity. And there are local businesses. There was a very prominent case recently where a local business, Southern Style Granite, asked two gay men to leave their store, saying that they don't want to do business with gay people. And my partner and I actually went to that same store a couple of days later just to verify the account, we were treated the same way. And while this made national news, and as Mike said, it brought a lot of pressure against...
Okay, we got to take a break, but we shall return with Kevin and Mike in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, 877-217-5757. Mike Wolf and Kevin Sarin on the fairness ordinance that is before the Metro Council today. Barry in Mid-City. Good morning, Barry. You're on the air.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for another very fine program. I certainly hope that Baton Rouge will step into the 21st century this afternoon and support this ordinance. It's long overdue, and it's time for us to remember, as we are taught in the Bible, in God's words, that each of us is the Tzelem Elohim, which in the Hebrew means we're each created in the image of God. It's just plain common sense and, to me, very reasonable for us to move now into the era of love, tolerance, and acceptance.
Why do you think there's been, this is Barry Weinstein, obviously, the rabbi, why do you think there's been such aversion to this passage of even a resolution in the past?
Yeah, those of us who worked on the resolution with Reverend Chris Andrews, with tremendous support from the Red Shoes, Wendy Hirschman, and the YWCA, and many other groups, and tremendously wonderful ministers and clergy, I think we're dealing with some kind of a reluctance to realize that change occurs, that words that some people take very seriously and literally from the Bible are true for all time. And my view, and I only speak for myself, I don't mean to speak for anybody else or for the congregation or whatever, but my view is that God is a loving God. The Torah, the Bible, composed with inspiration from God, with words that are subject to change and understanding as we grow in our understanding of one another, of the changes that history brings and a deeper understanding of psychology and acceptance of one another.
All right, well, the opposition, as David Dodson writes in the Business Report, I think is primarily rooted in religious beliefs. And David notes that the Bible does say that homosexuality is punishable by death, but it also says that adultery is punishable by death.
So if we believe
in the Bible, then homosexuality, at least homosexual acts, are punishable by death, but everybody who's committed adultery is also going to, at least according to the Bible, they should be put to death. Perhaps stoned to death, Barry. Maybe the council will enact some kind of measure along these lines.
Amen.
I doubt that our good city council and its very thoughtful members would do something like that. I think this discussion is really important, and I think it's an important discussion for the city that doesn't belong in the city council, but with those of us in the Interfaith Federation, in our churches, synagogues, and mosques, and to talk about it in a very loving kind of way. The Bible teaches many things that for those of us as Jews and Christians, we don't necessarily accept as literally the Word of God. We understand the impact of human understanding over the centuries. And gosh, some of us understand from the study of Holocaust how people who were gay, homosexuals, lesbians, and in any way different from what was established as the so-called norm, the Aryan, were slaughtered. We have grown so much, and this is a great city. This is a loving city. This is a city that's been our home, me and my family, for, gosh, 32 years or so, and we have received such love and affection. It's time for Baton Rouge to move ahead and to recognize that this is the right thing to do. I'm not an attorney. I'm not a lawyer. I can't argue it legally. But I really believe that when you think about it ethically, and for the men and women in our society who may have a different way of life, a different sexual orientation, it's time for us to recognize as a community, just like Shreveport has done, I think Jackson, Mississippi, hello. Come on, let's catch up with Mississippi, Baton Rouge.
All right. Well, Rabbi Barry, thank you for joining us from Mid-City. And I suspect Rabbi Barry will be at the Metro Council meeting today at City Hall. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right. Mike Wolf, did he score any points with you?
No, he didn't. Again, I'm as much against unjustified discrimination as he is, I'm sure. But the question is, what is the use of the civil law? And we can't ban immorality and stupidity and ignorance and give everybody lawsuits for if they're offended by their neighbor. When we're trying to achieve tolerance, it is much more effective to achieve it through voluntary means.
297-5633, Inkster Show at WRKF.org. Robbie Hogan writes, more lawsuits, probably so, are a bad thing. There are ongoing lawsuits right now by African Americans and women who have been discriminated against in profound ways. Should we repeal the Civil Rights Act to prevent these lawsuits? Your guest's faith in the free market to solve problems of discrimination are remarkable.
Yes, well,
you're a libertarian.
Yes, but and this raises the question about the Civil Rights Act of 64 and the position of Barry Goldwater, later reiterated by Rand Paul when he got involved in national politics. But I think there is a big difference on the facts between the racial discrimination experienced by blacks and other racial minorities in this country at that time in 1964 compared to today and the and alleged discrimination against homosexuals and veterans. It just they do not rise to the same level. They're very, very different social issues.
Kevin?
But the fact is that discrimination does occur. And if you're going to apply the law for certain classes of citizens, I think it should be applied fairly across the spectrum. And the fact is that there have been many cases of discrimination. In the 10 years I've been living in Baton Rouge, I know of three people who have lost their jobs because their employers were uncomfortable with the fact that they were gay.
297-5633 for Kevin Sarin and Mike Wolf. Deborah Davitt writes, so a transgender person gets more protection than women who still experience gender bias in salary and wages. I think she's saying that this is creating a special class, and that if you're a member of one of these groups, you're going to get better treatment, or you have more legal means to seek better treatment than those who are members of, let's say, the majority class. Does she have a point?
Nope, that's another fallacy. This doesn't create any kind of special treatment for gays and lesbians. It creates equal treatment, and that's a very important distinction to make.
Okay. Mike?
Well, we need to look at the rights of the person that's allegedly discriminating. He has freedom of association. A man who has a small business, a bar, a small shop, a small apartment building, he has the right to religious convictions, and he has freedom of association. It's fundamental. If he says he doesn't want bikers in his place, he doesn't like transgendered people with rings in their noses or whatever, he should have that freedom.
Not to allow them to come into his place of business?
Yes, yes. In general. Now, of course, we've done limits to it. We've tried to get rid of racial discrimination, which was a major, major problem and caused deep damage throughout the society. But again, I say this isn't comparable. And mm-hmm. We're trying to balance the rights of the owner with the alleged rights of the customer.
All right, well, what if
wishes?
Somebody is running, let's say, a gay bar and doesn't want heterosexuals in the bar? Do they have the right to prohibit that?
Yes, I would say. Yes, indeed. And this whole matter of trying to establish what are fundamental rights is at the heart of the problem. And you can't make every preference a fundamental right.
Kevin?
I would just like us to look at the experience in Arizona and Mississippi, where Arizona tried to invoke this so-called license to discriminate law. It's 2014. As one of the callers earlier today said, it's the 21st century. Let's let Baton Rouge join it. Arizona received such horrible negative press for even considering such a law that would allow businesses to openly discriminate against people based on their sexual orientation that the Super Bowl and other organizations that come to the state and bring business to the state really came down on Arizona, and they ultimately ended up not passing that law. But Mississippi did, and Mississippi just got another black eye, just like Baton Rouge is going to get today if they continue to live in the 18th century and not step up to the plate and show that all citizens of Baton Rouge are created equally and should be treated equally and with respect.
Mike, I was surprised to hear you were supportive of Ryan Heck's compromise, if it is a compromise. If you're against this kind of an ordinance, why would you be in favor of Heck's resolution?
Because it's a resolution and not an ordinance. That's
because
a huge difference. Because
it does absolutely nothing.
It expresses values, and that's how we argue values in this society. In a free society, you do it that way, by expressing your opinion, by trying to shame those who have unworthy opinions. But you don't force them and say, you must agree with me.
If you're going to have such a resolution, which again, I don't support, at least have the balls to include sexual orientation and gender identity in it. Don't just say everyone's welcome. It's just a way of masking your bigotry and your intolerance.
By the way, that even brings up the question of what a gender identity is. The ordinance defines it as an inner sense of gender. Inner sense of gender, that could change year to year. And it's, there are lots of fuzzy concepts in this.
What does that matter?
Again, but it makes it hard to establish the facts in a case where someone's alleging discrimination based on gender identity.
All right, another listener says, where's the mayor been on this? And I'm reading today's story in The Advocate. I think it's by Rebecca Allen. It is. And she writes, on Tuesday, Mayor President Holden quietly issued an endorsement of Marcel's measure on his Facebook page, encouraging people to email their council members to support the proposed ordinance. So the mayor has been a supporter in the past. He is a supporter now, but there are some who believe, Kevin, that he should be shouting this from the rooftops at City Hall.
You know, I think that you look at the statistics, the state supports this, the citizens of the state overwhelmingly support this, the citizens of East Baton Rouge Parish overwhelmingly support this. It's just some selected people on the Metro Council who don't, and it's just a very frustrating situation to be in.
Well, some people have termed politics as the art of the possible. And it may be impossible at this time and this place to get this ordinance passed. So would you be satisfied with the Heck resolution as a first step, or is this something that is designed to, let's say, some believe Councilman Heck's engaging in gamesmanship here. What do you think?
Well, as I said earlier, if you're going to have a resolution like this, I'd like to really have it demonstrate the spirit of acceptance and tolerance, and explicitly say that everyone is welcome here regardless of sexual orientation and gender identity and veteran status and all of the other things. Don't just lump them into a pot and not be explicit. It's just another way of trying to avoid the issue at hand.
Well, in Rebecca's story this morning, she says, along with Ryan Heck, council members Tara Wicker, Buddy Amoroso, Scott Wilson, and Joel Bowie have confirmed they will vote against Marcel's measure, and Councilman Trey Welch is expected to be absent. Now, why in the world somebody would be absent from a meeting of this magnitude, especially a politician like Mr. Welch, I don't understand this, but that the combined absence of Welch and the no votes from the others kills the measure. So it doesn't look like it's going to go your way today, Kevin.
No, unfortunately it doesn't. It's disappointing that Councilwoman Wicker is sending out Bible verses to justify her opposition to it. And I could understand that and even respect her if she applied, as you mentioned earlier, some of the other laws and dictates that are listed in the Bible, if she would apply them broadly and support measures that would not allow women to speak in church and to be submissive to their husbands and those other kinds of issues that she seems to not care about. She's just latching on to the gay part of the Bible, the couple of instances where it is mentioned. If she would apply it universally and keep her mouth shut like the Bible tells her to, I would feel more effort to embrace her and respect her, but she's not doing that.
All right, a few more minutes with Kevin Sarin and Mike Wolf. John DiGiulio, another fine attorney, the Harvard-educated Mr. DiGiulio, says, why does my friend, the Stanford grad, Mike Wolf, think we should have let social pressure address race discrimination rather than the civil rights legislation of the 60s.
Well, you can go back to John Stuart Mill. He was very explicit in his wonderful essay on freedom, on liberty, rather, explaining the role of social pressure. Adam Smith did the same thing. Social pressure is the main way we enforce norms in any society. The law is secondary. Most people behave themselves and do what's expected of them because they would look like idiots or be scorned by their those around them if they stepped out of line. And the thing is that the law, I believe, the causes of action in law courts should be left for the most serious infringes of personal rights and not the most mild.
Well, since we're such a God-fearing community, should we start going after adulterers, Mike Wolf, perhaps imprisoning them?
Of course not, and that shows why we can't use the criminal law to enforce moral rules. We can't say everything that I dislike can be banned, and that's, unfortunately, that statist tendency is one of the major directions of policy in this country and has been for the last couple of generations.
Gaston on Airline, please be brief. You're on with Mike and Kevin. Hi, Gaston.
Hey, Jim, I love your show. I just wanted to make a brief little statement is that Jesus loves sinners, and without sinning, there ain't no saving.
Well, Mike Wolf, who is a devout Buddhist, is now in the camp with the religious evangelicals. Who would have thought of the old axiom that politics makes strange bedfellows good? Frank, let's try to get to one more caller with Kevin and Mike. Phil on Jefferson, please be brief. Phil, you're on.
Good morning, and thank you, Jim, for exploring this. I'm ready to push back against the Family Forum. I mean, there's so much legislation, so much pressure that they put on our state and the city government and in the state legislature. My goodness, we have the highest rate of teenage pregnancies in the country because they think that abstinence is the way to teach children about their bodies.
All right. Well, is the Family Forum flexing its muscle?
Yeah, unfortunately they are. And I think that's they've been very effective. You got to give them credit. I respect them for their beliefs. I don't agree with them, but unfortunately they are. And I think, they are to a large extent behind the flood of emails in opposition to this measure that the council members are getting. And I'd like to point out that most of those emails are coming outside of East Baton Rouge Parish.
Well, Mike Wolf is not a member of the Family Forum, are you?
No, indeed.
But you also are in the same camp on this issue.
Strongly, I disagree with him, yes, but I believe in personal responsibility. People should make
what happens today.
Their own decisions.
This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number, 877-217-5757. Inkster Show at WRKF.org online. And with us in studio is the veteran anchorman, a guy who spent 25 years at WAFB on the anchor desk and, of course, worked in some of the largest markets in America, including New York, doing his thing before he came to Baton Rouge, George Sells. And today he comes to us not only as a journalist of significance, but as an aviation expert. You know a lot about planes and flights and crashes and that sort of thing. What do you think about how the media are covering the Malaysian Airlines tragedy?
I think some of them, Jim, are doing very well. As most people know, they got a lot of resistance There's the bubble right there on the floor. I'm tearing a studio up here. They got a lot of resistance when they first got there, but as is usual, the New York Times had a guy who spoke the local language and got himself on the spot and came out with a lot more information than any of the other organizations could get early on. And they were telling us things that even the experts were not aware of. And I'll give you a case in point. Just as soon as the plane came down, I called an acquaintance who was a Boeing 777 pilot. I met him through his wife, whom I had known in Detroit. And he is on the ALPA, that's the union board. And he said, with outrage, he said, do you know just a week ago I was taking a flight on a safe airway, safe, and he was doing this, over Iraq. And suddenly there's a bright flash 10,000 feet below me, and then there was a secondary explosion on the ground. It is one of our missiles, one of our drones, hitting a target on the ground. And then he's getting angry. And he said, he was at home in Hilton Head Island at the time. He said, what in the hell are these airlines putting us on these flight routes for? And then I thought back to Vietnam when a Cathay Pacific airliner went down over a war zone. I looked that one up, and it turns out that had nothing to do with the war. It was a police detective who blew up his son-in-law and his daughter for insurance.
Well, my goodness. James Fallows, fabulous journalist, national correspondent for The Atlantic now, he writes in the New York Times a few days ago, almost as soon as the news broke about the shooting down of a Malaysia Airlines flight over Ukraine on Thursday, in which all 298 passengers and crew were killed, people began to ask, what was a commercial aircraft doing over a conflict zone in the first place? Was this disaster somehow the airline's fault? He writes, Fallows does. The answer is no. But to understand why, you have to look at the complex realities of modern commercial aviation. Malaysia Airlines, already world famous because of the still missing flight MH370, appears to have been following all normal safety rules, and the rules governing airline flights over danger zones, including Ukraine, reflect the balance between the risks inherent in any flight and the efficiency on which the world airline system depends.
And that's true. And Nick Esposito, my 777 pilot, says that they do indeed fly over potential war zones and over countries. They fly over Syria, for instance, and talk about missiles flying. But what they're gambling, and they go by the conventions of the ICAO, the International Flight Organization, and that is, if they don't expect the participants in the battle to have missiles that can reach a height of over 30,000 feet, and there's no history of them having done that, then they go ahead and use the routes. Because mm-hmm. if we have to take Ukraine out of the flight patterns, it is a long, long way around to make a flight, which is a busy, busy route from, say, Amsterdam or London to Australia. It's hard for us to get the feel for it, but it's a great flight and a ride and a vacation for someone in Amsterdam to go to Australia, and or Thailand. There's a town in Thailand called Phuket, and some people sometimes mispronounce it on purpose.
Some anchor men have.
Oh, no.
Maybe Ron Burgundy, but the only thing burgundy about George is his shirt today.
It's going to add an hour and a half, 2 hours. The beauty of it is that the 777
right.
that my friend Nick flies just sips fuel. It can fly forever and get around these things. But nothing's going to really happen. I heard somebody talking this morning about, well, what sanctions should we bring against the Russians and whomever? We can bring all kinds of sanctions and we can raise hell. But I remember very distinctly, because I was sort of obliquely involved in it. In 1988, the United States of America shot down an Airbus coming out of Iran and killed more than 290 people. It was an airliner that was coming out of Iran on departure, going south. And we had this fancy new, oh, you can call it a missile, anti-missile system, on the ship Vincennes. And it was
right.
It was commanded by a man by the name of Will Rogers. Will Rogers III. No relation to the man who was the American.
Yeah, I recall that. Reagan was president.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was. It was the last year of his term.
And yeah, well,
but what it did to us, I was in Rome covering the elevation of the Detroit Archbishop to Cardinal. And I didn't know why, but when we were having a July 4th party at the U.S. Embassy, not the Vatican Embassy, but the U.S. Embassy in Rome. And I have never seen so many Italian troops standing around with automatic weapons. And, geez, what's going on? Well, as you know, when you're away from home and you're covering one story, like the convention or something like that, all you can think about is your story, particularly where the only place I got news was at 1506 on the radio dial. That was Vatican Radio, which did not tend to give much information. And then I learned what had happened. As a result, they snuck us out of there, put us in our hotel, picked us up an hour and a half early, and didn't take us to the main Rome airport. They took us to a military field northeast of Rome, and our Yugoslav airliner departed Rome there. They didn't want people going after us because of what the Americans had done. But the Pentagon lied and covered up about it for 3 years until a couple of journalists dug up enough
about
it.
All right, well, Vladimir Vladimirovich Putin has not taken responsibility for this accident, and it appears that Russia was involved. Why has Mr. Putin, in your estimation, why is he not, as Dianne Feinstein said, why is he not manned up?
Ms. Feinstein would say that. Because he has got Western Europe and the United States in a less direct way. I hate to use this term. I'm not going to use this term. I'm going to use a street term for he's got them in a tough situation. They get virtually all their energy from Russian oil fields and gas fields. It doesn't make a lot of difference right now, but all Western European oil and gas comes from Russia. There are many other economic sanctions that they could apply to Putin, but if they go too far, they're going to get real cold this winter. There are subtle changes and subtle takeaways that we have been going with for the last week. In fact, President Obama announced one of them while he was on that phone call with Putin when the plane was shot down.
Yeah. Well, Putin, as mentioned, has been excoriated by some, including the octogenarian U.S. Senator from San Francisco, the Honorable Dianne Feinstein.
Is she? Wow.
She's 81 years old, and she's basically telling Vladimir she's ready to go toe-to-toe, and she's 5'10", and he's 5'6". I might put my money on Senator Feinstein.
No, I'll tell you what. When you reach, I have learned that as you pass 65, it ain't the same.
Well, let's give a listen to Dianne Feinstein, the U.S. Senator, former mayor of the great city of San Francisco, and U.S. Senator from California.
And the separatists have been established very clearly. So the issue is, where is Putin? And I would say Putin, you have to man up. You should talk to the world. You should say, if this was a mistake, which I hope it was, say it. Even if it was a mistake, it's a horrendous mistake to make. And I think it points out the futility of what's happening in the Ukraine, because there will be repercussions from this.
Which one?
I can't tell you exactly what those will be.
All right. Well, what about Dianne Feinstein and what she said? Why isn't the president making that case?
Because he's got to deal with the reality. Or what's this new thing that drives me crazy? And I even heard my son say it. It is what it is.
It is what it is.
And yeah. what it is, he doesn't have to apologize because he's got us in the same position. Not from the 1988 incident, but he doesn't have to worry about it. And nobody, it seems almost incomprehensible that a Russian crew fired that missile. One of the things that, and the Pentagon can't tell us a lot of things about it because they don't want their capabilities to be known. But it appears from some source stories in the Washington Post and the New York Times that we had been watching that area with satellite cameras for quite some time, and we saw the truck carrying the missiles coming in to Ukraine with four missiles on it. And a few days ago, we saw it leave with three missiles on it. it seems apparent. That thing is not self-contained. It has to be connected to a network.
Well, today there are stories on NPR. There have been throughout the morning regarding rockets fired into Ben Gurion Airport in Tel Aviv, and this has shut down that airport. And you talk about a financial cost and the implications of that airport being down for some time. Those acts of terror, even if they don't kill anybody, they are significant.
Yeah, but I meant to look this up last night and I forgot. Before they named it Ben Gurion, there was another airport, Lud. Lud, it's like the Lod.
Lod Cook?
Yeah, the Lod Cook, except it's pronounced Lud. They have another airport that could take traffic farther from the scene. The Israelis they have ways of getting around these things, but it's going to scare off some traffic. An interesting thing about this is a sidelight, is what's going to happen to the cost of aviation disaster insurance. Right now, collectively, the insurance carriers for airlines have $800 million in claims out, and they have taken in the last year $60 million in premiums.
Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't take a whole lot to bring an airliner down if you are intent on doing it.
You know, that's interesting. It does and it doesn't. My friend, the captain of the United 777, mistakenly thought at first, when he first heard about it, that it was a heat-seeking missile. And he said there are ways to beat those things, even at its speed, 2,700 miles an hour, and all I've got is Mach 805, or 700 miles an hour, 600 miles an hour. Air Force One, for instance, has anti-missile capabilities. Other airplanes don't. But a lot of people have probably seen pictures of American military planes flying in Saigon, or flying in Baghdad. And it's like a fireworks show. They're throwing out flares behind them for the heat seekers, mm-hmm. to spoof the heat seekers. Trouble is, this wasn't a heat seeker. This missile was meant only carried 46 pounds of explosives. That's all it did. It traveled at 2,700 miles an hour, and it didn't have to do the old out behind the airplane, turn, and come back up and fly up the back of those General Electric engines. It had to get under the nose of the plane, come face it almost face to face, and explode and throw chaff, confetti, whatever, little pieces about this size, threw into the airplane and put thousands of holes in that very soft aluminum.
Well, it's a dangerous world in which we live. We always are pleased to hear from the legendary George Sells, and hopefully we will have occasion again soon. David Brown says Israel's airline is now using Ben-Gurion. 14 million people fly in and out every year. So
El Al is not using Ben-Gurion?
They are using it.
They are using it, yeah.
And that's it for today. We shall return tomorrow, and of course we'll know then, presumably, what happens with this fairness ordinance. Until tomorrow, for Frank Barnett, I'm Jim Engster. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.